Thanks for your patience. It took me a little while to get up here, and I got to get my wife her bulletin back. I swiped it to do announcements. Already took it from her twice. I want to make sure she knows what's going on, you know. So, yeah, I feel like I was gone, but I haven't missed a Sunday. Like I said, it's just sort of a odd feeling this morning. We begin a new series. I think we've got the graphic. If you have a chance to put that up there, I thought Joe did a really good job with that. We're going to look at the friends and the enemies of Jesus. It's really something that I've been thinking about for a while, and so I want to throw out some names. And you tell me whether these folks are friends or enemies. I'll come down here. Pontius Pilate. As far as we know, he's not too much in the friend column. Peter. Frenemy. I think you're going to find that most of the characters are not 100% one or 100% the other. I think we know the things about Peter, that the passage that I just read between the Last Supper and Gethsemane in Mark's Gospel is where Peter says, I won't deny you. If these other clowns do, that's one thing, but not me. And Jesus has to tell him three times tonight, you're going to deny that you even own me. One of the things, and I'm going to throw some other names at you here, and you can raise your hand, because they're not simple yes or no's, and that's the point. I don't know if you've seen the movie Crash. I don't know that I should support it because it's rated R for pretty much all the right reasons, but at the same time, it's a powerful story, and one of the things it really communicates is that most of us, all of us really, we're not 100% good, we're not 100% bad. And the reality is that I, as much as I aspire to be a friend of Jesus, and I've got pastor in front of my name, you can even put reverend in front of my name, but it doesn't mean that I always act like a friend of Jesus. So, raise your hand on this one if you have any thoughts on it. Judas. I don't think it's a real simple one here. Think about Judas for a moment. We know the bad stuff, right? I mean, he hands Jesus over. He betrays him. It's horrible. He did it for money. We also find out that he was a treasurer and he had some bad habits with, I know some people, not this church, I want to make it real clear, other churches, not the one down the road I mentioned, but I'm just saying, I know of some folks who've mishandled church funds. Still think of them as good people, most of the time. Judas did a lot of good. He was out there preaching. He probably healed people when Jesus sent out the 72 and he sent out the 12. He was doing a lot of good stuff. Kind of makes you think. Nicodemus. Any thoughts on Nicodemus? Now, I know most of you guys, I don't know if I want to say anything now. You just adjusting your shirt there, Joey, or did you have a thought on Nicodemus? Okay, all right. Nicodemus, you're going with friend for Nicodemus? All right. There's a lot of good with him. He was on the council, and we'll get into this more in the next couple weeks. But he stood up when they wanted to condemn Jesus, and he says, wait a minute, do we do this without a trial? This was earlier on. He comes to Jesus at night, and he seems pretty dull. He's not getting it. But, you know, when you get told that you've got to go back into your mother and be born again, it's a little confounding. Joseph of Arimathea. What do we know about Joseph? Raise your hand. I can't hear unless you raise your hand. It's classic school. Yeah. What's that? Right, he gave the burial site. Do you know that all four Gospels mention him? And I know you didn't raise your hand, but you're saying that he's a wealthy man. He was wealthy. He was a person who had something to lose. And when Jesus was dead, he was a friend to him. During his life, I don't know. I don't know a lot of what he did. Over the course of the next several weeks, as we move closer to Easter, I encourage you in your own reading, I encourage you as you listen to preaching on the radio, be thinking about the different characters, and more importantly, be thinking about the most important character in your story, yourself. How much of a friend are you to Jesus? And sometimes do we act as an enemy of Jesus? Jesus told a story, and I'm going to share that story. You know it very well. It's in Luke chapter 10. We know it as the story of the Good Samaritan, though Jesus never called him good. And in the story, the people who are supposed to be the good guys are not necessarily the good guys. And the guy who's supposed to be the bad guy certainly is not the bad guy. So I've got some show and tell for you later. I got so much stuff up here. That's why it took me so long to get up here. If you have a Bible, open up to Luke chapter 10. And as you're opening up there and put a finger there, I'm going to ask the Lord's blessing on the reading of his word. Father, open our hearts this morning to see that sometimes we align ourselves more as an enemy to you, even though we might call ourselves your friend. Lord, help us to become more and more your friends. Help us to be about the things that you'd have us to be about. Bless your word to us this morning in Jesus' name. Amen. Luke chapter 10. That's where it was this morning, so it's still there. Good. We don't want it moving around or anything. So in this story, there's an expert in the law, and he's asking Jesus in verse 25, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus says to him, he says, you know what's in the law. How do you read it? He says, verse 27, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus says, you've answered correctly. Do this and you will live. But he wanted to justify himself. He wanted to make himself just a little bit better. So he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Who am I supposed to be nice to? Oh, we're going to look at that today. Who am I supposed to befriend? In reply, Jesus said, now, one of the things I love about Jesus is, I don't know that Jesus went out that day and set up this guy because he's working on this story at home, and I'll call it the story of the Samaritan. No, he just comes up with this story off the top of his head. Now, I know he's the Son of God, but that's pretty smooth stuff. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road. Now, you know, when he's saying this to Jewish leaders, they're just like, uh-oh. Jesus is going to point out something here, and they can just smell it coming. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. In other words, he did nothing to help the man. So to a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, they hated Samaritans. Samaritans hated Jews. I could chronicle stuff from the New Testament, but you've heard it for a long time. Put any modern group in there that you want, that you don't like, okay? You don't have to say it out loud, just that group you don't like. I know you're a Christian and you like everybody, but you know that group you don't like. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. Everyone's like, okay, great story. It's time to go, because here comes the test. Which of these 3 men do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Jesus said, go and do likewise. I remember saying it last summer. It's the best four-word message ever preached. Go and do likewise. Do what that man did. Don't aspire to have the title priest or Levite. Don't aspire to have the title expert of the law. I don't like it when people say to me, well, you're a Bible expert. That doesn't mean anything. I know the Bible fairly well, but it does me no good if I don't go and do likewise. This story, there's so much to it, but let me just make a few observations. I really believe that this is a story where it depicts some things that we can apply today. The priest and the Levite, in essence, represent religion and the law. And religion and the law, left to themselves, don't help hurting people. They don't have the heart to do that. But this Samaritan, who I believe in this story is the Christ figure, represents Jesus in the story, who came amongst his own but was hated, was treated like a Samaritan, but maybe even worse because Jesus was crucified and his own people were behind it. The irony of the story is beyond anything that we can really even grasp. Jesus sees the person in need, as the Samaritan does, the same I sense, sees the need, takes care of it, brings him to the inn. We're supposed to be that inn, folks. In this picture, the inn is the church. And Jesus gives his money to the church. He gives his gifts. He gives what he has to the church so that we can care for the people coming in. The church ought to be the place where broken and hurting people can come and be healed. And do you know what? A lot of times it is. But it needs to be even more and more so. The people who were supposed to be the friends in this story were not. The person who was supposed to be the enemy was a friend. It's not the title, it's what you do. Figuring out who the friends and enemies of Jesus, I don't want to try to confuse you, but I don't want you to leave today just thinking, okay, I got it all figured out, and I know I've got my scorecard and I can figure it all out. I hope that over the next month, we wrestle with it. That we wrestle with, am I being a friend of Jesus when I do this? Am I being a friend when I say that? Because I think that's what's key. I want to tell a story because I encountered some people on my trip. I went on a hike, and hikes are always good for sermon illustrations, almost always. I didn't run out of gas on this trip, didn't encounter a bear. I'm going to move this out of the way for right now. But I did buy a new plaque, and I'm going to get there. I'm going to share a couple of plaques with you. So I hiked Black Mountain, which I always think of it in Carefree, but it's probably in Cave Creek, but you see it from Carefree. My brother picked us up from the airport last night, and he knew I'd hiked it this week, and he said, I asked him, I said, what color do you think Black Mountain is? He said, well, it's more like green. And I said, it doesn't seem black, does it? He said, no. But I said, when you hike it, there's a lot of this rock that's in there. And the rock is black. And the rock makes it very difficult to hike. You really have to climb it. Now, it may not look super dark here, but there's stuff that was darker, but this is about as big of a piece as I wanted to pick up. Now, I know some of you naturalists out there are going to say, because I hear people say this to me, you ruined the ecosystem because you took this rock. I'll just tell you, I did not ruin the ecosystem, and I want you to know something else. You and I are part of the ecosystem, and if I, as a part of the ecosystem, decided to pick up this rock, then I'm only doing what part of the ecosystem should do. If you don't track any of that, don't worry about it. There's better things to come. The hike was only 1.1 miles, which is not that much. I've been known to hike over 20 miles in a day. So this is a stroll in the park. 1.1 miles up, 1.1 down. But they have this little trick because I've walked along this road for probably about a quarter of a mile before then I get to the part where it says, this is where the hike begins. No, the parking lot was right there, like a quarter mile. So anyway, so I started hiking. It's pretty easy at first, and then you start getting into, there's this rock like this, and almost all of it's at like angles like this. And it's just like jutting out of the earth, and you've got to like navigate your way through there. And something that I've discovered the older I get, just for instance, here in wintertime, the ice gets slipperier every winter. You know what I'm saying? If you're like around my age, you get that. It just keeps getting slipperier. It hasn't changed, but my balance is not as good as it used to be. And I learned last summer that when I go on a hiking trip this coming summer, I'm going to get those hiking sticks. I don't care if I look stupid. I don't care what I don't care if people think I'm a blind beggar. I don't care what they think. I'm going to get those hiking sticks. But this was just a stroll in the park. Well, I got about halfway up this mountain before I realized I really could use a hiking stick. And I don't have one. And it's not like it's a luxury, unless you consider not falling off a mountain a luxury, unless you consider not having a broken arm or a cracked skull a luxury. I've got a picture of Black Mountain. You can put picture number one. They should be in the right order if they're the order that I sent them in. If not, we'll just slide along. If you can go to the one that's more like a sunset, that's it. That's Black Mountain, and it's not perfectly sunny or clear, but we'll blame it on my phone. If you come up along that way, then you get to the peak up there. It may not look like it's a peak, but it is. Anyway, so that's Black Mountain. It doesn't look like all that much. I got about halfway up, and I encountered this one guy, and he said, well, the stretch from here around that pass before you get up to the top, that's the steepest, that's the hardest part. So then I took off the way that he had been. And I started climbing over rocks, and there were drop-offs, and there's Cholla cactus. I don't know how many of you know what Cholla is. Some people call it jumping cactus or teddy bear cactus. It looks really light green. Birds make their nests in it. I have no idea how they do it. They call it jumping cactus because you would swear if you just touched it, it jumps into your skin. I'm not kidding. This is dangerous stuff. I have seen it go through cowboy boots, right through the leather into a sole. I have seen dogs get it on their paw. try to get it off with their mouth, and oh my goodness, it's one of the most horrific things you'll ever see. So I got this one place where I'm going through this pass, and I got a rock over here that's going to keep me from leaning the way I want to towards the mountain, and I got this big teddy bear choya right here. And if I bump into that thing, I'm not sure what's going to happen to me, because it's just going to be really bad news, and it's going to make for a very unfun hike. So I decide at that point, I make a wise decision to head back down. Now, I just want to share a couple of things. I get wisdom from all over. Heidi and I were up in Door County a few years ago. I didn't go to Door County for a long time. Do you know why, Butch? Because I always thought it was Dork County, so I just didn't go there. I always heard that when I was a kid, but it's Door County. But here's one. It says, I bought this up there, "You're never too old to do goofy stuff," by Ward Cleaver. "You're never too old to do goofy stuff." But I got one on this trip after the hike. It's by John Wayne. I'll try to do a little. When I do a John Wayne, I always have to start with, "Listen here, pilgrim. Life's tough, even tougher when you're stupid." Right? He says, if you're stupid. But you know what? I think when I look at my life, life is tougher when I'm stupid. I should not have gone up that mountain without a hiking stick. So I decide I'm going down. And I'm telling you, I turned around and I looked down, and all I saw were choya, rock, cliffs, vertigo. I was just like, I mean, I was praying. I'm not like, oh, Lord, if you could. I mean, I'm like desperately just like, Jesus, Jesus, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I have had this nightmare. I've had it many times. It's evening. It's twilight. The sun's off the horizon, but there's a glow, and I'm flying like an open canopy airplane. I've never done it before, but the dream always starts the same place. I'm taking off, and it's fun, and it's beautiful, and then I realize I have a limited amount of gas, and I have no idea how to land an airplane. I've had that dream at least 5 times, if not 10 or 20 times. I mean, I know the dream. That's what this was like. I've gotten up to this point. I don't know how I'm going to get down. See, that's the goofy stuff, the stupid stuff. I shouldn't have been there, but I was in that predicament. So I head back down the mountain, and I don't make it to the top, and on top of it, I don't know how I'm going to get down. I come around this bend, and there's these two guys, and I really think they might have been angels. One guy was a Native American, and one guy Hispanic, probably Mexican, and they looked over there chatting away, and I picked up the accents. And they looked over at me, and they said, "What are you doing over there, going cross country?" And they just kept going. I just thought, why did I go this way? I don't know. That way that I went, where I ran into the cactus and the rock, it was a bad way to go. So I looked the way they went, and I thought, you know what? I might be able to go up. So I didn't give up at that point. I really felt like the angel. I love when Jesus is raised from the dead, and then the angel says to them, "Why do you seek the living amongst the dead?" That's kind of what I felt they were saying. Why do you seek the trail over there when really you should have been over here all along, okay? John Wayne would have told me to go over there. So I head up, and I actually make it to the top. I sit down, and we've got a slide. That first one, that's the view from the top. It's a pretty nice view. You can see a long way. That's where I texted Heidi, and I said, pray, pray. Heidi, do I send you texts all the time asking you to pray? I just don't do that. Desperate, because I've now got to go down this rock. It's hard to explain, but when your ankles are going across rock like this, I mean, one of those goes, then you're going down the mountain. And JR and I have done this when we hiked the Grand Canyon and other places. We say, so how long would it be before you were dead if you fell down that way? Well, first you'd slide. You'd have like the worst like road rock rash for about 100 yards, and then you'd go over, and if you're still alive, and it's like, yeah, that's what I was thinking too. We just rate the different spots, okay? We just rate them. And this was nothing but all of that. So I begin to make my descent. Oh, we got one final slide. That's at the very top, and you can't really see it, but in the background, that's over a mile away. And there's this little flag up there. I call it the tomb of the unknown hiker, and that's where I was going to be if I didn't make it down. So I had the vertigo, choya, rock thing going, the nightmare, how do you land the plane? So I started heading down. And the thing I will give myself credit for is Normally when you're hiking, you talk, boy, first you talk to everybody. You say hello to everyone. First time I saw a hiker with like one of those wires just walking along talking. I mean, she's way up there and I hear this person talking, so I figure there's two people, it's just one. But everyone's like, how you doing? It's kind of like, oh, my balance stinks. I mean, I was telling people, it's like, maybe they'll pray for me. This one woman says to me, she goes, I said, I need a hiking stick. She goes, yeah, I can see that. She goes, I used to sell them. I said, well, I got the right person at the wrong time. And she said, I actually used to get them right here on Black Mountain. So from then, I am praying for a hiking stick. I'm headed down. She was headed up. I'm praying for a hiking stick. I'm looking everywhere. You know, I'm like, is there going to be like a thing with a bunch to choose from with rubber hand? I don't know. She said she got them right up there. She shows up 10 minutes later. I mean, she flies up and down. Other people can move fast. I can't in this terrain. And she's got this green stick for me. I don't know where she got it from. And it had kind of a bounce to it, okay, but it really helped. I just couldn't believe she did that for me, and I just thanked her, and I don't, you know, she ruined the ecosystem, man. She just ripped it right off a tree. I mean, you want to talk about the ecosystem. So I'm headed down with this thing. It's still going to take me a couple hours to get down. I mean, it's just going to take a long, long time. Come up with some other people, a nice couple, White Sox fans from Chicago. I mean, they're just wonderful people. I met some really nice Cub fans, too. I don't know what some of you are, like, groaning about out there. I'm just saying, they were nice people, and they were White Sox fans. Very nice people. I was just saying, yeah, this is really helping. I said this girl gave it to me. And this guy hands me his hiking stick. And he says, just leave it on top of my car. It's at the bottom. I said, he's like, yeah, please, go ahead and take it. I've got the Escalade with the White Sox plates. I'm like, yes. So now I got two. And then I learned that you got to be careful sometimes, because sometimes you want to be able to put your hand down, and if you've got a stick in your hand, you can't do it. So I asked them one more thing. I said, I saw that road coming up. Oh, that road seems so good to me now. Just a road, not this stuff where you're sliding down on your backside. And they said, yeah, if you go down to that clearing, instead of taking a right to the trail, you'll find another trail that'll lead to the road that way. From that point, I was down in a half hour. Put that walking stick on top of that black Escalade, and I was like, God, you heard my prayer. He heard my prayer, and he answered. I just read something recently from John Ortberg. There was a woman, she was in a rough neighborhood, and she gets locked out of her car. How many of you are locked? Yeah, we've done it. And this has to be a little while ago, because she got a coat hanger, and she got it from somewhere, and she's working on it. And I've done it with the coat hanger, but it doesn't work so well anymore. She's like, God, I need help. She was desperate, the same way I was on the mountain. She's like, God, I need help to get inside this car. She says, a rusty, nasty-looking car pulls up. This big old guy gets out. He's got a beard. He's covered with tattoos and got some sort of biker thing on his head. That's just what the story says. And she's like, oh, my goodness. It's like, well, I'm desperate. She's like, can you help me with my car? He's like, yeah. Within like 30 seconds, gets it open. She gives him a hug. She says, you are a nice man. He says, no, I am not a nice man. He said, I just got out of prison. I served 2 years for auto theft. She gives him another big hug, and she's like, God sent a professional. I got two hiking sticks. I got a better way down the mountain. I just want to share a couple of insights, and I want to tell you one other story this morning. I love it when Amber loses it. It's a good thing. Lessons. Lesson number one. Some of you know Ruth Scott. We had the chance to have dinner with her the other night in Phoenix, and I told her this story. And I didn't emphasize this so much this time, but before I got the hiking sticks, I would grab onto this black rock wherever it was. And there was nothing better than grabbing onto the rock. I mean, because it's your life. I mean, you just really feel like it's your life. And she's like, that'll preach, Paul. Jesus is your, and she went into about four different hymns and everything. She goes, you're going to say that? Yes, I'll say that Sunday morning, Ruth. I did. That's for Ruth. Number two, God hears our cries. And I'm telling you, there's times you pray, and there are times that you pray. There are times we really understand the mess that we're in, and there's times we just kind of think, no, it's okay. You know what? The other day when I was on Black Mountain, I understood that I was in a mess. I wasn't worried about my dinner reservation anymore. I was worried about legs, ankles, skulls, life, and I wanted to get down. God hears our cries. Folks, we need to be honest. If I'd walked down that mountain and everybody asked, how are you doing? Oh, I'm blessed, brother, sister. I'm doing great today. Beautiful day, isn't it? I was more like, I need a hiking stick. I'm stupid. I didn't bring one. Okay? And you know what? Because I was honest, some people were able to help me out. Sometimes we need to ask for help. That's number four. Sometimes we need to ask. You know, with the things that we go through in life, life is tough. And sometimes we need to ask for help. Number five, sometimes we need to ask for help. Number six, sometimes we need to ask for help. But sometimes we are just so proud. It's like, no, I got this. And sometimes some things happen where, like, we can't do it. And that's what I faced that day. And I wish it was just on a mountain, but there's other things that I face in life. There's other things that you face in life where you're like, you know what? I can't do this. Ask for help. Do you know, take a look around this room, and there's some folks who have the same color hair that I do. And they have some life experience. And if you're younger, do you know, there are people with life experience. They could help you. But you know, a lot of us, you know, folks that are older don't walk around saying, I have free counsel. You know what? Develop relationships with people that are older than you, and you might find out some things about life that you wouldn't know any other way. Sometimes, and just like in the story of the Samaritan, your help is going to come from the person you least expect it from. Sometimes your help is going to come from a person you least expect it from. Some of you might even receive help from a White Sox fan. I know. It's hard to believe. I've got his license plate number, and if someone can help me illegally get his address, I'd like to send him a thank you note and maybe a gift card. Number seven, if you're counting, I threw you off because I repeated one thing three times. But the next one is, sometimes we don't get help from the folks we'd expect to. It's just the way life is. My mom used to always say to me, the people that I invest in the most seem to return the least to me. And the people I invest in the least, it seems like they appreciate it more than anybody else. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. Sometimes you get help from the place you'd least expect it. And the final one is sometimes there's an alternate path. Sometimes, you know, my ego wasn't into it. I didn't have to say, I hiked the nasty route of Black Mountain exclusively. No, when I got the chance to get off the nasty path, I got off the nasty path because I wanted to have dinner with my wife, not at the hospital, okay? Folks, there might be a turn that you can take. And sometimes we just keep looking at the same problem, and we stop realizing there's an alternate route over here. Now, I think Heidi'd back me up on this. I will stop and ask for directions. I mean, not after 4 hours, usually after 4 minutes. I will stop and ask for directions. I want to tell you one final story that I get from John Ortberg. And I'll just term it this way. Jesus has a friend in San Francisco. And her name is Linda Wilson Allen. And the reason that John Ortberg knew about this woman who drives a bus in San Francisco is because she was the cover story for the San Francisco Chronicle. I lived out in the Bay Area for years, so I'm familiar with the San Francisco Chronicle. The guy who wrote the article rode her bus every day. And after riding her bus every day, just decided, you know what? I've got to do a story on her. I've got to find out more about her. Because she loves the people that ride on her bus. I don't think there's too many people that say, that is what I aspire to in life. Maybe you do. Maybe Ralph Cramden was your hero, okay? And you're just like, I want to be a bus driver. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that a lot of us think there's a lot of trouble that comes along with that. Traffic jams, grumpy clients getting in and off the bus, all kinds of breakdowns. But she loves the folks who ride on her bus. She knows her regulars. She will wait at a stop for one of her regulars and make up time later in her route. She knows it that well. There's a woman in her 80s named Ivy that this journalist noted. 80-something. She's got grocery bags, and she's struggling to get them all in. It's probably illegal, but Linda throws that bus in park, and she gets off the bus, and she helps Ivy onto that bus. Now Ivy lets other buses pass so she can get on Linda's bus. Like, no thanks. I'll stay here in the rain and the wind. It's like, I'm waiting for my bus. Linda once saw a woman, Tanya, who's in a bus shelter, you know, one of those places where they're waiting so they don't have to be in the rain. She could tell Tanya was new to the area. She could tell that she was lost. It was almost Thanksgiving, so Linda said to Tanya, "You're out here all by yourself. You don't know anybody. Come over for Thanksgiving and kick it with me and my kids." This invites total stranger over. The reporter who wrote the article rides the bus every day and says that she has built such a little community of blessing on that bus that the passengers offer Linda the use of their vacation homes. I mean, this is, they're like family now. I mean, if you're going to ride the bus, this bus, you're family. It's bus number 45. If you're in San Francisco, you want bus number 45. Yeah, they offer the use of vacation homes. They bring her potted plants and floral bouquets. When people found out that she likes to wear scarves to accessorize her uniforms, they started giving them as presents to her. And one woman even upgraded and brought her a rabbit fur collar so she could wear with her bus outfit. I'm not going to say anything about the ecosystem right now on that one. Okay, I'm just going to let that one go. The article says Linda may be the most beloved bus driver since Ralph Cramden. So you think about it, what motivates her? And I love this, that it was on the front cover of the San Francisco Chronicle. I lived out in the Bay Area for a year. When I think of San Francisco, I don't think of Jesus right away. I think they need Jesus, but I don't think, now there is a godly town. I just don't. I'll be honest. I lived there. But I love this. The article asks, so how does a person who's dealing with gum on the seats, cranky passengers, engine breakdowns, and all this, how does she have this attitude? The article says her mood is set at 2:30 in the morning when she gets down on her knees and prays for 30 minutes. The Chronicle says there is a lot to talk about with the Lord. She's a member of Glad Tidings Church in Hayward, which is there in the Bay Area. At the end of her line, she always says, "That's all. I love you. Take care." Have you ever had a bus driver tell you, "I love you"? And some of you are parents, and if your kid came home and said, "Yeah, the bus driver said I love you today," it's kind of like, all right, they're in trouble. Let's write them up. There's something wrong going on there. When I go hiking, one of my hiking mates is a longtime friend of mine now, former teenager, Bob Trenkler. And I don't know why he does this, but especially when we go into national parks, anytime we're in the car, but he'll do it at restaurants, when we're leaving, he'll just do this, "I love you, bye. I love you, bye." So I'm always driving the car. We're going into the national park. He's military, so we get in for free. And then just as we're pulling away, he's like, "I love you, bye." And, you know, I'm the guy that's sitting there that's kind of like, "Yeah, I love you too." It's like, but think about it. This is a person with total strangers, has changed the environment, has changed the culture on one bus in one city. Why? Because she's a friend of Jesus. And she sees Jesus in other people, and she treats people the way that this certain Samaritan did. And it's amazing how they've responded. So this whole story inspired John Ortberg to get in touch with this woman. He pastors a church in Silicon Valley, a very wealthy area. And so he invited her to speak at the church, and he said that these folks in his church were inspired to and multiple occasions by this woman who drives a bus to give standing ovations throughout that message that she shared. Afterwards, they lined up, dozens of people lined up so that they could talk to her. Just a couple thoughts in closing. You know, if we're going to be a friend to someone, it's, and I think sometimes Christianity, we've just somehow lowered it to the point where it's like, "Jesus, I'm your friend. And last week, I didn't do anything that you wouldn't like." Can you imagine if one of your friends, maybe someone from the church, called you up and just said, "Hey, I know I didn't talk to you last week. I didn't do anything with you. But I just want you to know I didn't do anything that you wouldn't have liked." Woohoo! But that's sometimes what we've reduced following Jesus to, not doing anything wrong. A friend does things that bless the person that they befriend. Friends do all kinds of stuff they don't have to do. So this Easter season, this Lenten season, if you want to be a friend of Jesus, do something you don't have to do. Do something for someone who won't be able to pay you back. There's that old quote, the true character of a person is seen in how they treat those who have nothing to offer them. It's not saying the person isn't of value, but they don't have anything to offer them. Folks, we live in a business world where people, I'll give you something, but only if I'm getting something back. Or I'll treat you well, but I'll treat somebody else like garbage. How do we treat the people, service staff at restaurants, hotels? How do we treat the housekeeping? How do we treat all sorts of people? We need to treat them the way Jesus would treat them. Folks, it's not by name. It's not because we have this title Christian. But if we're going to be a friend of Jesus, we need to do things for him. And in Matthew 25, he said, I want you to do them for somebody else. I want you to do these things for the people that can't pay you back, the people that would be considered the least in this world. Do it for them. Let's pray. Lord, I pray that this Lenten, this Easter season, that we would become more and more your friends. Not by the stuff we don't do, but by all the things that we do. All the things we don't have to do, but we choose to do. Lord, that young lady didn't have to tear a branch off a tree for me, but she saw that I was in trouble, and she helped me. And Lord, that guy with the hiking stick, I never would have thought to have asked him for it, but I asked you for it, and you put it on his heart to give it to me. Folks, help us, Lord, to see around us that there are people who are every bit as much in need. Help us to find out what they need and to befriend them in your name, especially those who will never be able to repay us. Let us be your friends. And Father, help us to have the courage to look inside and recognize that there might be some ways that we're something less than a friend to you when we're less than a friend to others. And Lord, may we become more and more your friends and less your enemies. We ask it in your name. Let's stand. Let's